It's Sunday morning, time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, your host Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio on the Great Outdoors Show, and I hope you had a most merry and wonderful Christmas and are enjoying your holiday season. This morning's show is, I'm going to combine a couple things. I'm going to sort of do my first of the year show next week, in which we talk about maybe New Year's resolutions that would be great for the outdoor world, but I'm going to talk about a couple this week, and then I want to sort of talk a little bit about a great experience I had in the outdoors watching bald eagles while duck hunting, quite a journey, and talk about a few things going on in the outdoor world. So let me first start off, though, with a little bit of story time. After all, it is the holiday season and lots of stories being told around the fire or being read or being dreamt of. So my story is actually not a dream. It's the real thing, and it involves watching bald eagles, lots of bald eagles, in the air hunting waterfowl. And for those of you who've seen eagles in action harassing other birds, you understand what I'm going to talk about. And for those of you who haven't, just sort of imagine. In this case, I'm on a river in the west. It's not that cold, but there's lots of snow in the mountains in the background. And there are bald eagles, some 20 to 25 within view, sitting on the big cottonwood trees overlooking the river. And this river is, oh, maybe half a mile wide. It's the Snake River. And they are watching rafts of ducks. And when the birds get up, what happens is they would hunt in pairs and in teams. And we think of bald eagles or raptors as being individual birds. Well, what I saw last week is that they actually work together and they work in teams. So with a slate gray sky and the hint of winter in the air, certainly nothing that we have had here in the Midwest. In fact, I'll talk more about that in a moment. The eagles sat in these bare cottonwoods and watched the ducks. And one eagle then would go very high up in the air, hundreds and hundreds of feet, if not 1,000 feet or more, and start circling. And then out of nowhere, an eagle would come out of a tree and strike these birds low over the water. And we're talking about rafts of birds, mostly mallards, of 200 to 300, maybe even more in each flock. And the eagle would come screaming low over the birds. If there were lots of birds, let's say 500 or more, the ducks did not get up. They huddled together. Some dove under the water, but they remained on the water. If there were just a handful of birds, they all got up. And then this eagle high in the sky was watching these birds as they got up. And it could tell which ones were weak or sick or were not able to fly as well. And the next thing you would see, after the strafing eagle had flown by or through these flocks of ducks sitting in the water, the eagle high in the sky would plummet, and it would follow the birds and pick out the weak bird in the flock and chase that bird and chase it into the water or into the brush. It was an incredible sight to watch as I'm sitting in a duck blind, a duck coming by me as fast as it can fly, separated from the rest of its flock by a bald eagle that is chasing it. And in one case, the duck came at me so quickly, I wasn't about to shoot because I was watching this incredible air show. The bald eagle closing on the duck as fast as it could, and the duck flying as fast as it could go. And it came over my decoys at about 2 feet off the water, which is unusual to begin with. And it just literally went straight into the water like you would jump into the ocean. Instead of jumping up in the air, you would jump straight into the ocean to get in as fast as you could. That's what this duck did, coming into my decoys, and it went under the water in a single motion, and the bald eagle swooped down behind it and then, of course, went up in the air when the bird hit the water. It was not there. The duck popped up and sat there in the water, and with that, a bald eagle I hadn't even seen came out of a tree, must have been from behind me, and all I heard was the ripping of air, and it's smash with its talons, that duck that had come up out of the water in a perfectly choreographed motion and grabbed it in its talons and struggled to fly away and flew off to cross the river to the far bank where it sat on the mud and in its talons it had a hen mallard. This all happened in a matter of seconds. So a low, strifing eagle put a flock of birds in the air, very high up in the sky. The eagle saw that, and as though on cue, it came diving down, and it chased this flock and picked out the one weak bird, separated it, and then followed it and chased it into my decoys, and the duck went underwater, and at which point it went underwater when it popped up out of nowhere, as I just said. Here was another mature bald eagle, grabbed it in his talons when it surfaced, and off it went. I was left feeling I had just seen one of the most theatrical and cruel elements of nature, and I had. And the birds of prey, which have come back so unbelievably all across the continent as DDT has gotten out of our system, they are proliferating now from coast to coast, which is a wonderful thing. On the other hand, if you're one of the elements that are preyed upon by eagles and other predators, owls and hawks, probably isn't such a wonderful thing. But it's a signal that nature is healing itself, that the devastation of DDT is finally moved out of the system. It's taken a generation of human beings and many, many generations of eagles. But it appears as though eagles are thriving. And as eagles thrive, of course, they are going to need things to eat. And in this case, they were eating ducks, but they put on such a show that it made you realize, first of all, they must communicate with each other. They have some form of intelligence that they communicated with each other the way they hunted. But the way they did it, synchronized, choreographed act, and this was not the only time that morning, it was the only time I saw them be successful, but it was not the only time that morning that I saw an eagle high overhead, followed by one strafing low over the water, followed by more birds in the air trying to identify the birds that were not as healthy that would be a future meal. It was really, really an incredible, incredible experience. So moving from what I have to consider one of the great moments in nature that I've ever seen, this winter so far, well, it's a pretty easy winter. And easy winters, if we can make it all the way through, easy winters are terrific winters for deer and turkeys and pheasants and quail, because they enable those birds to survive without deep snows, without a lot of frozen ground, where there's ample food supply. We have had, certainly the last two winters in the Midwest, we have had really, really serious losses of habitat, and as a result, we have had major reductions in deer population. Turkey populations have also been hurt, and we have had quail and pheasants, and so really all birds in the winter, if you have a cruel winter, like we had the last two, and we shouldn't forget those, they have a toll. They take a real toll. So in this winter so far, I mean, my goodness, 60 degrees in Chicago on Wednesday, and there's really no polar, as they like to call it now, polar vortex in the works. This is something that will have a real benefit. If we hang on next spring, we should see a rebound in some bird populations and some mammalian populations, especially white-tailed deer, which have been hurt badly by the last couple of winters. And if you're listening to the show up this morning up in Wisconsin, particularly northern Wisconsin, you fully understand the importance of the white-tailed deer herd beginning to regenerate itself, as we have seasons now where does can't be harvested, where permits have been dramatically cut back. So we have we're a long way out of the woods. We've got all of January and February, and frankly, some of the worst storms for animals come in March when the food reserves are depleted. We're a long way out of the woods, but we are off to a start, which indicates that Mother Nature, as she wants to do from time to time, is giving animals a break that she's been pretty hard on. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the great outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's a winter wonderland, and it's your playground if you have the right equipment. Well, the 2015 Chevy Silverado is the key to a winter full of activity. With 12,000 pounds of towing capacity, Silverado can tow your snowmobiles anywhere you want to go. Hunting, ice fishing, Silverado gets 24 miles per gallon on the highway. And if you're hunting for a new truck, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer. They have leasing experts who can get you more Chevy for less money with a big fixed lease. Chevy Silverado is the first and only pickup to offer 4G LTE Wi-Fi that keeps you connected on the go. It's the longest lasting, most dependable pickup on the road, and that makes it the best choice you can make for off the road. Throw in a 2-year, 24,000-mile free schedule maintenance, and you've got yourself an all-American camping partnership made in heaven. Ask about the big fix lease at your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer, or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for all the details. Track it down. And oh, by the way, there's no limit.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you're having a wonderful Christmas and holiday season. As you listen to the show this morning, wherever you might be, one of the things that happens in winter, even if it's not cold, is that your favorite four-legged friend, your dog, requires a lot more water. It's true of humans, by the way. Those of us, all of us need more water in the winter, but your pets especially. They're inside, the heat dries things out, and you may have noticed that your pets are drinking more. They require a lot more water, so please make sure that your favorite hunting dog or favorite lap dog, whatever it might be, has a full bowl of water at all times during the winter. It's a time that's very stressful for animals, and they need lots of water as the dryness, the heat in a house will really sap their energy. Speaking of sapping the energy, my goodness, the Land and Water Conservation Fund, something I've been talking about on this show for the last year, which was coming to an absolute, well, it was coming to the point of decision last week with Congress, ended up in the omnibus bill, the budget bill, this $1 trillion, whatever it is, which let me know when you think anyone's actually even read the thing. The Land and Water Conservation Fund, that wonderful $900 million a year fund that's supposed to go to, well, it does go to helping open space, building boat ramps, parks, all kinds of things that benefit outdoor recreation, it got a boost. It's been authorized for $900 million. That's what it is by Congress. But Congress has been finding a way to only spend a couple hundred million on it because other things were deemed to be more important than the original intent, which Land and Water Conservation Fund was set up with the offshore oil tax royalty. So anyway, $100 million more, which is real money, will be coming LWCF's way in the next 2 years, each year. That's great. But what Congress did not do and had the opportunity to do is they had the opportunity to fix LWCF, eliminate waste, make it a much more economically efficient program, streamline it, and give those of us who love the outdoors, frankly, much better results. Congress kind of took an easy way out. They did make some reforms, but they did not make the kinds of structural reforms that were needed. And most significantly, they did nothing to address the economic inefficiencies and overlapping of agencies. So LWCF has been reauthorized for the next 2 years, and then we'll fight over it again, 3 years, and then we'll fight over it again in 2018. Who knows what the makeup of Congress will look like that? You know, we have no idea what the priorities of the country are going to be in 2018, but Congress missed an absolutely great, great opportunity to deliver for the taxpayers a highly efficient program, one that really is targeted on the things it was supposed to do: open space, access, improved land management, land acquisition, all this to drive outdoor recreation in America. And it does what it does so often. It punted on the difficult decisions, made the easy ones, and we are left sitting here today thinking we spent a year of our time, a lot of us did, and you certainly listened to me talk about the importance of the Land and Water Conservation Fund. And what we essentially got was, well, we're going to keep going pretty much along the same way for the next 2 years, and then we'll take a hard look at how to make this program better. How would you like to be in a business like that? We're going to go pretty much as we are for the next couple of years, maybe three, and then let's really look and see how we can make this business a lot better. Life doesn't work that way. And yet the government no accountability, there's no urgency, and yet for those of us who love to hunt and fish and love the outdoors, we understand the urgency as we look at habitat being degraded, we look at resources being wasted, we look at boat launches falling into decay, we look at fish hatcheries that can't hatch fish because there isn't enough money, we look at streams that are not being maintained, we look at bike trails that are falling apart, we look at parks where there aren't park swings. All of this, we in the private sector are the individuals who see those consequences, and we expect the government, which is charged with to run this in an efficient way, and yet it doesn't. And the Land and Water Conservation Fund has an opportunity to start over with the biggest pot of money that exists in the outdoor industry, and Congress essentially just said, well, we'll tinker with it now, but boy, just wait. 3 years from now, we'll show you how we're going to fix this program. Well, I'm not holding my breath, and I doubt you are. But at least the good news is there is money coming for Land and Water Conservation Fund. In fact, there's more money coming than there has been. And hopefully some of it will be efficiently spent. It will be. It's just too bad that all of it won't be efficiently spent. Moving on to actually one of the really interesting private sector stories before I go for the year. There's been a mega merger in the outdoor industry. Rubbermaid is going to buy Jordan Corporation. This puts the Jordan Corporation, is the parent company of Pure Fishing, and that is the largest manufacturing of fishing equipment. So you're going to have a portfolio now of Penn, Berkeley, Abu Garcia, Fenwick, Fluger, Shakespeare, Stern, Mitchell, Coleman. Unbelievable. All these iconic American names are going to be now under the brand of Rubbermaid in a $15 billion deal, which obviously goes way beyond the fishing industry. There is a huge outdoor brand being consolidated. The combination of sales of these two companies will create $16 billion in consumer goods sold. I mean, that's a lot of money. So it is a major merger in the outdoor world. Well, 2016 is knocking on the door. Next Sunday, I'll talk about some of the things we hope will open up for us opportunity-wise in the great outdoors. In a year in which election and politics are certainly going to dominate, we can make a difference. I thank you very much for listening this morning. And once again, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. This is Charlie Potter in the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.